to the 13th edition of the Roots Aviation Podcast. Today we're bringing you an exclusive interview with Vuyani Jahana, the CEO of South African Airways.
He took over in November 2017 and has been tasked with turning around the South African flag carrier, which has faced financial difficulties in recent years.
Vuyani joined us live on stage at the conference programme for Roots Africa 2018, which took place in Accra in Ghana.
Vuyani discusses his first year in the role, as well as his key priorities for the year ahead.
He was interviewed by Ed Robertson, the editor of Roots News magazine. We hope you enjoy it. So, over to Ed.
Okay. Well, my name's Ed Robertson. I'm the editor of Roots News and feeling very privileged right now to be here with Vuyani Jahana. Now, for those of you who don't know, Vuyani was appointed as CEO of the South African Airways Group on November the 1st last year, following a 22-year career with the Vodacom Mobile Communications Company, which he left as chief officer of its business division. Leaving Vodacom, he brought a passion for people, customer service, and results to his new role at SAA. That's going to be just as well, because it is no secret that SAA has been struggling following 6 years of operating losses. Most recently in the 2016-17 financial year, losses trebled to 5.6 billion rand. And in September 2017, the airline required a 3 billion rand bailout. However, Vuyani is confident that his record at Vodacom and his deep understanding of strategy formation processes and ability to work with people and navigate complex issues put him in the right place to turn SAA around. Vuyani, thank you very much for being here. And I think the first question is, it looked like it was going very well at Vodacom. You could almost smell the boardroom. And then suddenly, you go to SAA. What was your thinking behind that decision?
Yeah, look, I think firstly, SAA is a national airline. It's one of the SOCs that are quite important, being a flag carrier. And flag carriers about national aspirations. Obviously, when you look at it, it had challenges. So it could not see through that aspiration through a very profitable operating model. So when I was called up to support through an open process and see when the board was of the view that I would make a difference, so I was not going to sit in the private sector and shy away to what was a national program, what was a national aspiration. So I had to sign up and join SAA. Obviously, when you look at SAA, at the time from outside in, you look at the P&L, so about 32 billion rand of revenue, 32 billion rand of cost, 30 billion rand of revenue, 2 billion rand of cost you need to adjust. You get a sense that within a two-year period, with a very strong commercial delivery, you should be able to soak those costs and absorb them. So that was the logic. So from outside in, it looks quite a much more doable task, if you like.
Okay. And so do you think, though, that the lessons you've learned at Vodacom, are there relevances that you can bring across to an airline?
Yeah, very much so. I think we have to keep in mind that airline business, as I come to understand it, is a very, very complex business, largely around safety, moving customers from one point to another, safely in the most secure with great sense of customer experience. That's one part. But the rest of it is around you're running a retail business, to be honest with you. This is my view. It's not taking anything away from the complexity. A seat is a perishable product. If you don't put a customer on that seat, a revenue-paying customer, it perishes. It's the same as a data packet.
Yeah.
If you don't price it correctly, you don't have a use for it, it's time-based, it perishes, if you like. So if you take that from that construct, you really understand you're running a retail business that happened to be in aviation with heavy regulation in terms of safety. So when you take it from that perspective, customer experience becomes the main driver, and profitable trading in the environment, in the market, becomes one of the key elements.
So there are all sorts of whistles and bells, but actually,
at the end of the day, it's about delivering a great customer service at the right price point so that you have a sustainable business model within, obviously, a very, very rigid and highly high levels of safety consideration. So it's a retail business, and to be honest with you, the way I look at it, and I can't talk about SAA as a proxy for the industry, I just have a sense broadly as a customer that there's still a lot more that the airline industry has to do around customer engagement, especially with regards to digital. Everything is going digital, improvement of economics, artificial intelligence, robotics to actually do some of these tasks. But most importantly, we're getting to an age of what you call private pricing, just for you pricing. So which means we're going to a segment of one where there's a micro-segmentation, where you're on a segment of your own because of your own profile as a customer. So this is not what I got from the airlines in general before I joined the airline industry. So I think there's a lot to be done in the industry around digital engagement, data analytics, artificial intelligence, and micro-segmentation to improve customer offers, but also make money out of this.
I was waiting for you to say blockchain there as well.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a roadmap for this around security, where cyber becomes key. Yeah.
But I notice you made the point that it was an option from going to a private sector to a public sector, and no less but the national carrier of South Africa. That's a motivation too as well?
Yeah, obviously. The big part was more the motivation around the state of the airline. Probably if SAA was not going through the challenges that SAA was going through, I probably would not have signed for it. If SAA probably was just a private sector business with no national interest, I probably would not have signed. I think a combination of the challenge, the sense that I could do make a difference, but also the fact that this is a national asset. So it's a combination of those three things that made me to come and join SAA to make a difference.
Because when you talk about that as well, one of the things, we've got your turnaround plan. The key points appear to be the cut the procurement and some staff numbers, end unprofitable routes, overhaul the culture of complacency, and perhaps talks of raising up to $1 billion to fund company until profitable. Now, when you're talking first of all about the company culture, do you think that pride that you have, that's something you want to see everyone having and everyone serving in SAA as part of the success?
Look, I think if you look at SAA, it's a great brand, 8 years of existence with a very good track record on safety, really a brand that has really stood high in the continent itself, really standing through to this idea of taking Africa to the world and the world to Africa, and seamlessly connecting Africans within their own continent. So for a long period of time, SAA came through in terms of that broad aspiration, if you like. But I think winning is very important in any organization. If consistently you are not winning in the market, people get demoralized, people lose trust in the system. So you have to build back a culture of winning and drive up the aspiration, the sense that it is possible and it is in our hands. And actually, the constraints are internal, not in the market. So as we ignite that culture, that sense of aspiration within the people of SAA, I think we're going to get back to our winning ways. So this is what we need to inject. This is what we have to show them it's possible. Actually, it's within the reach of people of SAA to actually go out in the market box, play to win, and succeed. That's the culture we need to ignite.
Yeah. But with the culture as well, and talking about the need for a positive culture, are you going to be able to maintain that with some job cuts, or are they going to be attritional? Are they going to be natural?
Look, in the final analysis, when you do a big restructuring like this, there are a number of things we're focusing on. Firstly, look at the commercial logic of the organization. Are we really driving the right commercial strategy? Are we having an understanding of market customer needs and preferences? Are we the player, the provider that's being preferred more often than not by our customer, if you like? So if you understand that, of course, your mechanism to trade, your gross profit margin, your frequency, your seat capacity for the right segment, cost of segmentation. So we have to address that. That we have done. That's why you saw us are rationalizing routes to make sure we can have an operating platform that's commercially sound to make us succeed. That's the one side. Then we need to get into the cost base of the organization, reorganize ourselves for success. Everyone knows here that this business is a razor-thin margin industry, if you like. So with very low margins, give or take, given where I come from. So a lot of effort for very little returns. What is important there for your cost base, you need to have an efficient operating platform that allows you to give you headroom to weather the storm during cyclical changes in the market when you're facing heightened competition, but also when some of the indicators that are outside your control, exogenous factors, exchange rate, oil price point, you need to create enough headroom. This is the culture I want to bring. This is what the restructuring is about. but also relook at the operating model so that you build a commercial focus organization that is an international organization with a very strong operational density to actually make sure that you retain your safety standards and safety records. So this is the restructuring. So at the end of the day, it's the choices we make. We have to bring everyone on board, that we have to do a lot more things to trade ourselves out of the hole. And I think people of SA are having these discussions, and I think changing the culture is not inconsistent with the culture of winning. Winning starts with getting yourself out of the hole, and therefore, and it's not going to come without sacrifices. Everyone understands this.
Sure, sure. And the talk of raising $957 million, I think, is the figure that I saw, to fund the company until profitable. Would that just be a case of taking care of day-to-day costs, you know, money that's on the table?
Yeah, look, so when I got to SAA, there was about 9.2 billion rands of debt, which was historic. So that needs to be addressed. So we have to get to relook the capital structure of the business so that there's the right proportionality between debt and equity, so that you earn a bit of a license to play in the market. You need a stronger balance sheet because it gives you leverage to do things, to trade, to actually be able to acquire assets, to have a massive leverage against your lenders and creditors. So this is what we're working with the shareholder to actually restructure the balance sheet to give us a bit of a license to play. So part of that is working capital requirements until we break even, and part of that money is about settling the old debt or bringing it down to levels where it fits what I've defined as optimal capital structure for a business of the size of SA.
And is it the government you're talking to about that money, or should it be private investment, or do you believe both have a role to play?
Look, at the moment, our shareholder is government. Obviously, when you face a situation like this, you go for capital calls to the shareholders. So government has made pronouncement as early as last year that they are open to getting private sector investment into SAA. So waiting direction from them to give us a next step, what we need to do. But by far, what we need to do is to make sure that between debt and equity, there is a balanced contribution. Debt alone is not an answer to SAA. We need a balance of both equity and debt to restructure the balance sheet and make sure we can succeed. So that's what we're focusing on.
Okay. And the, because I saw the your very own Pilots Association recently proposed to place SAA in a business rescue plan, very similar to Chapter 11 in the US. Is that an option? Is that something you countenance, or is that the union being the union?
Yeah, I think that's solidarity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, solidarity. They had threatened to put SA into business rescue. And what we've said always consistently is that we need to understand that what business rescue is about. It's a provision of South African Companies Act, which indicates that if at any stage the company is going through difficulty, the management and the shareholders of that company can go for voluntary business rescue. What that does is simple. It says you halt all creditors from demanding payment of their monies today. It gives you a breathing space to restructure the business before they start calling on you. That's all what it does. Now, obviously, you must appoint a business rescue practitioner. You must provide funding for the business rescue plan. Now, where we are, we have new management, new board. We've been working on the turnaround, which I don't see any business rescue practitioner coming up with a better plan in that regard. So we're working with the shareholder to look for funding of that plan. So obviously we continue to trade. We trade quite competently in the market. So all the things that a business rescue practitioner would do are already in place. So this is what we discussed with Solidarity. And upon us talking to them, they've released a statement to say they will hold, or they will halt their pursuit of business rescue. And I think we are finding one another. I cannot overemphasize dialogue during the time of where we are going through. Dialogue with stakeholders, and unfortunately, they didn't talk to us. They just went to the media to pronounce when we are talking to everybody else. All the unions, we talk to them every week, monthly, we have meetings with them.
Well, the unions do like to talk loudly. That's all we should probably say about them. Now, the big one for everyone here, of course, is Roots. And you've obviously said ending unprofitable Roots. That seems to be a no-brainer. Now, two of the ones that have been identified as profit-making and that you're keeping on are to New York into Washington, D.C. Is that because they're American roots, or are there other places in America that are performing very well for you, or where is good that you want?
Yeah, but also keep in mind that when you talk about rationalizing routes that are not profitable, it's not a case of saying every route that is not profitable today, it's a candidate for shutdown. No, it's about the plan, the strategy around that route. You talk about short, medium, long-term plan. If there is no clear sight of when we can make it work, obviously that becomes, you see the normal Boston product, my product profile. If it's a dog, then you deal with it. But some of the routes are in the roadmap for us for a turnaround. They are key. So we think that the American market is important for us. We think that the U.S., North America, Southern Africa market is about largely about tourism. It's about leisure. And I think we'll continue to attract a big number of customers from that area. So we have to stay put. We have to look at how we operate those routes. We have to look at the underlying economics to improve it from a cost point of view, and also just how we service customers. So it's not because they are American, because I think they present great potential. Some of them are quite profitable, by the way, so even in the U.S. route. So not every route that is not profitable today is a candidate for shutdown, if you like. It's only when we believe that in the medium to long term, there is no prospect, either because structurally it's a thin traffic route and we don't have a plan to have the right metal to address that in a viable manner. So we realize, okay, we're not going to address that. Let's put it on the side, yeah.
But we know the work that goes into even creating a route. Yeah, it can be 3 years before they get off the ground.
Absolutely.
How were these routes sort of getting in there in the first place, the ones that weren't making you money and didn't seem to fit the strategy? Or look, is it a new strategy?
Look, I think it's hard to answer the question because it's a history of SAA. So this is what we're trying to fix. We're trying to put a lot more commercial logic and really, really focus on customer experience, opportunities to succeed, sustainability of the business. So they may have gotten into the portfolio. So I don't know how, but where we are today, we're starting to look at what is the best portfolio to take us forward. Having said so, I think we've done most of the restructuring. Yeah. What we're focusing on now is building up capacity, expanding the route network, making sure we can fly our aircraft a lot more so that we can soak the underlying cost of ownership of the asset. And that's where we're focusing opportunities where we can fly more of our aircraft.
So where else do you think you can fly more with the aircraft? Where's the radar?
So I think one of the key things that's important is that the continent is very key for us, really to continue to partner deeply, create opportunities within the African continent. It's our backyard, it's our home base, if you like. So we need to stay true to being an African carrier, if you like. So that's what's going to be part of our strategy. I also think that there are opportunities in South and North America for us to look at that, the Far East. So you may see it more like the I talk about the whole globe, but actually there's a great route south to south, South America to Far East that would go through Johannesburg. Johannesburg hub strategy is still a strategy that I think is relevant, but we need to augment it through other enablements and initiatives that we need to do with government. So there are opportunities. I think also in my reading of the market, new as I am, there's going to be a point where the hub strategy in terms of the long haul is going to come under question significantly. That creates opportunities for us being a direct, largely being more of a direct route as a destination airline, if you like.
And do you think, because obviously we've had the launch this year of the SAA TM, do you think finally the sort of the mindset in Africa is changing as to how to view aviation, that actually it can be a very positive thing as opposed to, carriages of the rich, I think?
You see, as I'm new in the industry, I still call myself new, I'm 7 months now. One of my observations has been that there's a sense of a winner take it all. Scale big is the enemy of the small. And I think we have to relook how these things work together for the continent. We're going to have to stitch together assets and capabilities that belong to different ownership structures and render them in the market as if they were one. That talks to building consortiums through commercial JVs, finding deep alliances. So
the single African travel market that's been approved. What it does, it enables us to do many things in the sense that the policy instrument has been created. But it's not the policy that's going to make this thing work. It's very, very clear commercial agreements. It's going to be leaders in business who are going to take deliberate efforts to make it work on a win-win basis. So we've got the umbrella framework having been established. What will undermine that policy is if all of us are taking a view which is about me versus you. I think we need to find a way of working together to enable better intra-Africa connectivity within the right competition context. So there's a lot of enablement I see. I think there's an opportunity to win together.
And when you say working together, do you mean so closely that consolidation starts becoming an issue or an opportunity even for Africa?
Look, firstly, consolidation presupposes that you've got a critical mass of things that are competing. My sense is that there's still a huge underrepresentation in the continent. There's small players that are still green shoots all over. So to talk consolidation at this stage is probably a bit premature. That's why I'm talking about deep partnerships, because when people are starting up things, there's a sense of aspiration and pride that tend to stand on the way of getting to deals like that. So it's when everyone has seen the pain and difficulty that start to build, and the upheaval of running a small operation alone, that people start to gravitate towards deal making. I think initially it's going to be commercial partnership, trust-based relationships that are within the regulatory and competition context. So I think it's early days to talk consolidation. I think it's going to be something beyond code share, but short of M&A, that's going to be driven by a deep understanding of where we are. But once you've got a critical mass, and I think that's where the consolidation at the M&A level will start kicking in.
And then, see, I got an email, this is why it wasn't in my notes to you. The CEO of Air Mauritius on Friday, I think, in announcing the results, happened to mention an African alliance, potentially with you guys, Kenya Airways, Rwanda. Was he talking ahead of his time, perhaps, or is this something that is going on or going ahead even?
Well, there are a lot of aspirations. We are talking, all of us, so we're talking to everybody as SAA, because we believe that success in the continent is going to be partnerships. It's going to be deep partnership. It's going to be about the like-minded players finding, having the shared aspiration, finding ways of working together. So we're having a number of conversations with everybody else. We have not locked down any particular agreement with anybody else. But we also know that most African airlines are too subscale and vulnerable. And we don't think that there's going to be success at a global scale with fractured economics. So the underlying economics must be stitched together. You need to look at how you can pull together joint advantages on procurement pools, sharing of IP in different areas through in a structured way within the right competitive framework. So this is what we are busy talking to a number of players, but the key thing is finding partners who have the same aspiration, who understand that the future is about partnership more than big versus small, kind of winner-takes-it-all approach. So we are not there, as I say. We are more in saying, how do we create a platform for all of us to actually be able to weather the storm of global competition?
And do you think the partnership, would you see it restricted purely to the continent, or do you see those partnerships then splitting out and going, you know, to Asia, to Europe, to the Americas?
I think we have to keep in mind that the construct of partnering in the airline industry is well defined through different type of alliances, for example. So that is well defined. What I think, early days as it is for me, I think that the kind of alliance frameworks that exist, because they are big in nature, it becomes a very broad church. There's not enough room to go deeper into things that people can find commonality on beyond just the broad sense of connecting passengers from one airline to another. But once you zoom in into specific peculiarities of common challenges, then you start to find synergy cases and so on where you can stitch together. So I think it's going to start by getting the people we have found commonalities in terms of both challenge and opportunity, working together to find opportunities and actually soak those, whether it's on the revenue side or on the cost side. So as you do that, probably it could start seeing more people who have the same challenges coming together. But so far, we think the continent, there's an opportunity to deal specifically with this kind of challenge.
Great, great news. Now, of course, I don't think you can have a session at all in the aviation industry without mentioning China. Reason why, I think it was the CEO of Tourism South Africa recently was calling on more routes into China to take advantage of the market. Is that something you can help them out with?
So look, I think on the main that we address the Far East, specifically through the Hong Kong gateway. So we believe we're underrepresented in that route, in that area, for example. So it's an area that we're exploring, but we have to be very, very careful that there are a lot of players in that route through different kind of hubs, if you like. Now, we must be careful how we pick our choices in that area, because when we make choices, we must stay with them. So we're busy doing evaluation of the Far East and doing the study of how best to actually get back in there at scale. It's part of the broader evaluation that we're doing. So you can't really succeed without a reasonable good presence in whatever form or shape in that part of the region. So as we speak today, we're busy doing the analysis, but we have to find very smart and clever ways of getting in. You can't go there blindly and think you'll succeed. Otherwise, you will regret your decisions.
And so when you say smart, though, is that more, you know, talking about your Shanghais, your Beijings, where the mass markets are, the people who are well-traveled?
We don't know. I guess those are things that are going to come out of the wash from a business case development point of view. But we're looking more from a broader, the level of exploration of the market, the growth drivers in the market, where there are still white spaces for us to come in as a latecomer and be able to make sure we can actually make a profound impact and carve a space for ourselves to survive under the sun. These are the kind of things that in our mind, keep in mind that if you're coming late to the play, you have to be very careful. You have to look at white spaces. You must have a reason why you think you'll win if you're a newcomer in the region. So we have to finesse the detail, make sure that we're very precise about the reasons why we believe we'll win.
And when you're marketing the airline, I mean, you know, you've spoken of the need to have an efficient airline, one that works, need the bums on seats, all of that. But you've also got a destination. Is South Africa rather an extraordinary and a very lucky destination to be selling? You've got wonderful wildlife, people, cities, wide open spaces. Do you have it all?
Yeah, I think it's important. That's why our relationship with SA Tourism becomes very, very important, as in terms of packaging destinations. So there's enough reasons for the world to come to South Africa and Southern Africa, if you like, or SADC region, if you like. So we have an asset to actually work with to make sure we can succeed. What's important is being able to tailoring the offerings for different segments of the market and understand their reasons to visit South Africa. It's also important that we work closely with the immigration authorities to make it easy to travel to South Africa, and especially from the originating destinations where we can serve efficiently. So we do have a leverage, and I must also say that we also have a big leverage because we have a very reasonable big domestic market, if you like, where we compete. For example, our low-cost carrier in Mango is predominantly domestic and is very successful. So it's a very vibrant, competitive domestic market, so over and above just the SADC region. So that on its own does cushion us. When we do it right, when we operate in the right strategy, the right logic, right framework, should cushion us from the vulgaries of ultra-international competition. So just by, even though being on the southern tip of the hemisphere has its own challenges around utilization of the aircraft, but it doesn't mean we don't have an upside as well. We do.
Sure. And obviously, you know, the thing of where to go, where to make the money and everything like that, everything depends upon the asset, the fleet, the metal on the ground.
Absolutely.
Are you happy with the fleet at the moment? How much have you been thinking about that? And do you need to restructure it at all to make?
Yeah, I think we have to think through around the fleet story. We've got still the four engine aircrafts that are not efficient, especially if you look at the oil price movement. But also, we have to look at the things that are the modernization of the internal onboard cabin experience, IFE. When you have an old aircraft, then you start having customer experience issues. So we are aware of these issues, but we have to look at the fleet. But also we have to find ways where we can fly the aircraft more. I mean, if I fly to London, I have almost 11 hours on the ground waiting for the full rotation. So then network strategy, network design, fleet plan must take into account a much more optimized utilization. Otherwise, the economics of the international segment start tanking. So we are thinking along those lines. We have no option but to think along those lines. But it's early days in terms of network modeling, looking at scenarios, how should the network evolve to look like in order to get better return on capital employed.
And we heard in the last talk as well, there was quite a bit of chat about the need to get some hubs going in Africa. And I think you've spoken about being a hub for Africa as well. Geographically, though, are you in the right place to make that work? Would you not like to be more central? But that's something you can't do anything about.
No, I think to be honest with you, you can't. It's no point crying over factors you can't control. So you are where you are. There's an upside, great country, great destination with everything that you could look for as a tourist. But at the same time, we are in the African continent. I think what's important is the logic of partnering deeply. So there's no reason why we should be very strong in medium to long distance routes within the continent. At the same time, partnering deeply with the feeder network in West Africa, East Africa, and Central Africa with the right gauge aircraft. What's important is how we manage and control the quality of service, safety records, and the overall customer experience. And this is where we talk about partnering deeply, creating assets. There's a huge IP in SAA, really, really world-beating IP. Even the best airlines in the world still struggle to beat us in this regard. Now, that must be made available to our partners through a good commercial arrangement, and that lifts everybody else. It makes that all of a sudden a smaller airline in West or East Africa begins to access IP of an 8-year-old operation with global standards. So that you can't tell me that's not win-win. And this is the things we're thinking about. This is our logic. This is how we're seeing the continent. So therefore, it starts to change the notion of Johannesburg versus Accra or Nairobi, because it's about having partners that expand our network into the different corners of the continent.
And of course, Vianney, it's not often we're lucky enough to have such a man here. I do have to put it out to the audience. I wonder if anyone's got a question that they'd like to ask. Yep, do we have a mic coming up behind you? Thank you. Hello, you just let us know who you are, please. That would be great.
So my name is Ola Wright. I'm the CEO for West Africa Tourism Organization. And I just want to pick up on something you said, you know, that, you know, South African Airlines wants to be the hub. But however, you actually kind of like, you know, really, you know, down in in Southern Africa. And I did quite catch, you know, your answer to, you know, his question about how do you want to go about doing that? Because I know we actually have an initiative, you know, of having kind of like, you know, better connectivity within Western Africa and across Africa at large. You know, and South African Airways is actually one of the key airlines in the continent. So how do you really want to, you know, harness, you know, working with other African countries to achieve this goal?
So I think if I can be more precise, mm-hmm. I hope I heard you. You're saying I need to answer the question of how we are going to address the different parts of the continent working with other airlines. Is that
yes.
the question?
With other airlines and basically connecting the different African countries, because one of the, you know, biggest issues, as everyone will know, is that there isn't enough connectivity within the continent. Somebody mentioned earlier that, you know, to actually go from, you know, I think South Africa to Gabon, they had to go to Paris first, because, you know, you actually get better connectivity from Europe rather than, you know, within the actual African continent. And that is an issue, well, a big issue that needs to really be addressed.
Look, our strategy is clear. We're going to partner deeply with regional airlines. We're going to continue to do long distance out of Africa into Europe and inside Africa east, west, south, north. But then when you look at the West Africa, for example, partnering deeply with a regional airline that could leverage our capability and experience and IP to build their portfolio and to create better intra-Africa connectivity. So you start to create a much more bigger network effect. And this is going to be done not because we want to succeed alone, but I think the regional airline will grow bigger, will also have a much more sustainable network. It gives us relevance from the as an Africa interconnecting partner with our European or other parts of the world. We become a lot more material by using different kind of assets that don't only belong to us, but stitched together through a common IP that guarantees safety standards, customer experience, and aligned commercial, including on-time performance. So we're going to partner deeply. We're going to do more than just code share. We're going to do much more things that are significant. But we're going to be very careful who we partner with, because shared interest, shared aspiration, trust becomes critical.
Excellent. Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Great. Does anyone else have a question? No? I've got plenty more. You'll be pleased to hear.
Okay. Thank you.
Obviously, we do have Ethiopian Airlines in today, and Tewolde Gebremariam. They've had slightly different trajectory between South Africa's over the last 5 or 6 years. Are there any lessons that you can learn from there, or is every African country so different and every airline?
I think there's always lessons to learn from success stories and even failures, if you like. I think part of what, firstly, beyond SAA, South Africans have to learn from the Ethiopian case study is what we call focused and national interest, which is very, very specific. So I think if you read from outside in, you get a sense that a national airline with a very, very focused thinking strategy, with a huge enablement, with stability in leadership, so which we haven't had for a long period of time. So there are lessons for Ethiopians, for South Africans to learn from Ethiopians about how to bring stability in an airline. That's the first thing. I think we have an opportunity to learn from them how you build with such a pedigree. Even though you could argue different kind of policy instruments apply, park those aside. I think there's always a lot of lessons to learn from leaders who have stayed the course, because even when the policy environment is different, there is still a role for leaders, there are still difficulties, there's still upheaval. So they have a very different domestic market structure, if you like. We have a much more different one. Probably we have much more advantage than them, if you like. But they have managed to build quite a very good momentum. So there's always lessons to learn from them.
Would you presume to give them any advice yet, or is it still early days for you?
Okay, get out a bit.
I said, would you presume to give them any advice, or is it early days?
No, look, it's early days. I think we're busy with our own strategy. We're busy walking through all the key issues that we have to do to transform the business. We're going through a restructuring process, building a commercial organization. And I think as we go through the process, what is exciting is the opportunity that's in the market. Yeah. Notwithstanding the level of competition globally, I still think that there's a massive opportunity. Continent is growing. So when the market is growing, it's no longer a pie of a fixed size where to win somebody must lose. So you can grow with the incumbents. This is the thing. So there's an opportunity for us to grow. So we're focusing on that.
Finally, we've got time for one last thing. It's 9 months now, I think, into your job, or it will be at the end of this month. You still glad you took it?
Yeah, look, I'm still glad I took the role. I think if you ask me now to join, I would take it again. I would be a lot more wiser, because I've seen the workings of the state, the difficulty to navigate, very different from the private sector. So the things you could do in private sector to get ahead, it takes you 2 to 3 times in the public sector. So there's a penalty in executing in a public sector constraint than you would do in a private sector. I guess that's why I hardly believe governments can run business, if you like.
Okay. Well, it's not just been a privilege having you here. It's been a pleasure, too. So thank you very much for your time, Vianney.
Thanks for having me.